The revenue numbers coming out of the AI industry this week are the kind of figures that reframe how you think about the competitive landscape. OpenAI announced that its July revenue alone exceeded its total Q2 revenue. Think about what that means structurally. It means the company's revenue is not just growing, it's accelerating at a rate that makes prior quarters look like warm-up exercises. Axios is reporting that Anthropic and OpenAI together are on track for a combined annualized revenue rate of $120 billion, which puts them ahead of McDonald's full-year revenues and closing on Starbucks.
Morgan Stanley published a framework this week projecting 25 to 50% returns on capital for hyperscaler AI spending, GPU rentals, model APIs, third-party compute infrastructure. That range is wide, which tells you the analysts are working with genuine uncertainty, but the directionality is clear. The institutional investment community has moved past the will AI generate revenue question and is now in how do we model the return profile mode.
Commonwealth Fusion Systems, closing a $1 billion raise to bring their total to $4 billion, is a separate but related story about where patient capital is being deployed. Fusion is not an AI story, it's an energy story, but the investor overlap is meaningful. The same risk-tolerant capital that funded early AI infrastructure is now moving into Fusion, which suggests a certain class of investor has decided that deep tech bets on transformative infrastructure are their structural thesis, not a one-off.
Ashenbrenner's hedge fund is the cautionary counterpoint. Leopold Ashenbrenner became prominent in AI circles after publishing a widely read essay on AI development trajectories in 2024. His fund, Situational Awareness, reportedly surged past $20 billion on concentrated AI bets and is now in talks with investors and lenders after losses tied to the tech sell-off. The details of which positions caused the losses aren't public, but the fund's concentration in AI-adjacent trades means the recent period of AI market volatility hit it harder than diversified portfolios.
SpaceX hunting for urban spectrum to challenge U.S. wireless carriers is a story that deserves more attention than it's getting. Starlink satellite broadband has proven its value in rural and remote areas, but urban spectrum is a completely different regulatory and competitive game. The FCC licensing process for urban spectrum is exhaustively contested. Every major carrier has lawyers whose full-time job is spectrum defense. For SpaceX to succeed here, they'd need to either acquire existing licenses through secondary markets or win new allocations through FCC proceedings that typically take years. The challenge to wireless carriers' framing is aspirational. The actual competitive displacement timeline would be much longer.
Sony suspending sensor production after the Kumamoto earthquake is the supply chain story I want people to keep watching. Sony's Kumamoto facility produces roughly 4 million image sensors daily, and that facility supplies not just Sony's own camera and phone divisions, but Apple, Samsung, and a substantial portion of the global smartphone market. A shutdown of even a few weeks creates downstream shortages in final consumer products 3 to 6 months from now, which is when Christmas season manufacturing for smartphones typically happens. The timing of this earthquake in late July couldn't be worse for holiday production schedules.
Russia's ruble stablecoin collapse deserves a brief return here from a financial engineering perspective. The mechanics of a ruble-backed stablecoin are inherently fragile in a sanctions environment because a stablecoin's stability depends on the underlying reserve asset. If the ruble is itself under pressure from sanctions, the stablecoin's peg cannot hold. You're essentially trying to create a stable digital instrument backed by an unstable fiat currency that's being systematically attacked by external financial pressure. The collapse was structurally predictable.
And the U.S. firms shifting manufacturing back to China, not because China became more attractive, but because the tariff gap between China and Southeast Asian alternatives has narrowed to the point where the supply chain diversification cost no longer pencils out, is a reminder that tariff policy is not a set-and-forget instrument. When you raise tariffs on China and also raise tariffs on Vietnam and Cambodia, you haven't solved the China dependency problem. You've just raised costs uniformly.